This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human animal connection.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Human Animal Connection. I am so delighted to have you, and also very delighted to have a veterinarian with me, Dr. Nancy Kay. She is both a veterinarian and an internal medicine specialist for animals. She's won awards. She's written several books. Welcome to the show, Dr. Nancy.
Thank you so much.
And first of all, tell me, what is the award you won? I know it's a prestigious award.
It was an award given. It's given once a year to a veterinarian throughout the United States, and it's called the Animal Welfare and Humane Ethics Award. I was presented with that after writing my first book called Speaking for Spot. I was honored for how important the human-animal bond is to me and helping others appreciate it.
That is so wonderful. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I know you've also written a book for kids called A Dog Named 647. We'll hear about that book in just a moment. Yeah, it's so important. Not all veterinarians are thinking about the human-animal bond, and it's very special when those do. It really changes everything when that is in the forefront of our relationship, is the quality of that connection. And thank you for recognizing that. So great work, great work.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about, we have a program, Canines Teach Compassion, where we bring therapy dogs into the high schools. And I know that your book very much focuses on compassion. Tell us about A Dog Named 647.
Sure. So A Dog Named 647 is a middle grade adventure novel featuring 12-year-old Mia. And the action that takes place is she has a chance encounter with a runaway golden retriever who happens to be pregnant. And Mia watches helpless and hopeless as a man drags the dog away. Mm-hmm. And then Mia's task is to find that dog again, because she just fell in love with that dog in the little time that they spent together and got mm-hmm. a really strong sense that the animal needed her. Mm-hmm. And so the story unravels with her trying to track the dog down and then discovers a puppy mill. And then the action begins. What will Mia do in response to this puppy mill situation?
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Very powerful. I know there's a way in which animals open our hearts in ways that's just very magnificent.
Yes.
And hard for some people to understand who haven't experienced it. But for those of us who have, it's really life-changing. So thank you for writing that book.
And I wrote it specifically because I feel as though our generation and the generations younger than us mm-hmm. haven't done much to end puppy mills, which are the large-scale commercial breeding facilities, kind of mm-hmm. like factory farming for dogs.
Yes.
And I was very inspired by Greta Thunberg, the mm-hmm. climate activist, mm-hmm. and thought we should take this puppy mill issue to kids so that they become aware and are conscious buyers who don't buy puppies from puppy mills.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great. And how did it impact you being a veterinarian to have this awareness about the human-animal bond, the importance of it? How did that change your practice?
It completely enhanced it. I was just like most people who become veterinarians, love animals, and went into the profession loving animals. And I found that, yes, I very much enjoyed helping the animals get better. And what I enjoyed almost more was observing and interacting with the bond that the people had with their pets.
I bet you saw a huge range, right? You saw people who were very bonded and people who were not so bonded
yes.
and not bonded at all. And what did you do when you saw that? When you saw, let's say, the absence of a bond, not good connection, what did you do?
It's difficult. I would try to encourage people to make the bond more important. There's sometimes when I just wasn't able to do anything about it. An incident where a professional athlete, very well-known professional athlete, came in with his dog with a broken leg. The dog had been hit by a car. Mm. and he didn't want to fix the leg. He didn't feel like that the money would be worth it. And that hits hard. Yeah. But the vast majority of people I deal with are passionate about their animals. So when I can, even if the prognosis is terrible, when I can give those people peace of mind about what to do, that fills my heart. That's what I enjoy most about the profession. And I think a lot of other veterinarians do as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a big responsibility. And I think that responsibility weighs very heavy on veterinarians, especially if they get a negative Yelp review.
It's
devastating.
It really is. I mean, I know, I think, you know, anybody going into the veterinary profession has a deep love of animals, so they wouldn't go through all that training.
That's right.
But they often don't get the training that they need to, in terms of how to handle the stress level, how to, you know, how to teach people about how to have a better bond, the amount of euthanasia that the profession is going to be dealing with all the time. What was the hardest part for you about being a veterinarian?
Emotionally, truthfully, the most difficult thing where I would cry is when I was euthanizing an animal and I recognized that the bond between the people and the animal was so strong. And that just touched my heart in a way that it was emotionally very difficult. But I also felt like it was an honor to be there in that situation to make the people's journey and the animal's journey a little easier.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so glad that you did that work. I'm just curious what your personal beliefs are. Like, do you believe that animals have a soul or an afterlife, or that connection after death is possible? What are your personal beliefs about that?
I'm open to it. I'm not convinced of anything.
Yes.
And I'm super curious about the afterlife. Yes, I was talking with a group of people about fearing death, and I put forth that I think I'd be kind of curious about what that afterlife might be. Mm-hmm. But I don't have strong convictions that it exists.
Yeah.
But I love the rainbow bridge philosophy.
Right. The possibility. We don't know for sure.
Yes.
There's a lot of things we don't know for sure. But has there ever been an experience that made you think, oh, you know, maybe this is possible, that made you personally just feel like, you know, maybe that is possible, that there is continuity between life and death? Yeah. You have a story about that, or an experience of that? Or
I do believe in animal psychics. Not all of them by any means.
Of course, just like any other profession, there's good ones and bad ones and in between.
Yeah. And I've tested it out and even had psychics help me hone in on a difficult diagnosis of where the problem was. But I have heard stories where a person would visit with a psychic after losing their pet and they would learn things that would be impossible to know unless it was real, that they were communicating with their animal.
Yeah. And that did that move you? Did that make you go, wow? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if you, I'm sure you meet people who say, oh, I'd love to be a veterinarian, a young person who says, you know, they wonder, what do you advise them? Do you say, yes, do it? Or do you say, oh, you know, here are some things to think about? What do you say?
It's a mixed bag these days. In the past, I would have said, absolutely, it's the best profession in the world. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was magical. It was marvelous in every respect. But the profession has changed a lot. As a veterinarian, I was always given the benefit of the doubt. And my motives for recommending things were never questioned. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, many people are saying, you wouldn't charge that if you really loved animals.
Questioning
the veterinarian's motives, thinking that they're putting finances ahead of the well-being of the people and the animals. And unfortunately, these days, the average debt a veterinarian graduates with is between $225,000 and $250,000.
That's huge. Yeah.
And then they're going into jobs that starting pay might be $60,000 or $70,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So it creates a living situation where buying a new car might not be a possibility. Mm-hmm. Buying a house might not be a possibility. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about the negative online reviews. Mm-hmm. I never had to deal with that. That didn't exist.
Yeah.
So I think it's a tougher profession. But if I talk with someone and they're passionate, mm-hmm. and they know that they love science, they know they love animals, they have the personality that wants to care for people,
mm-hmm.
and do it.
Yes, 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 yes. And even though we know veterinarians have a very high suicide rate because of the stress, yeah. and especially now, like you mentioned, the financials, you know, the veterinarians are really struggling in many, many cases, and then so much corporate interference now. And yeah, it's a different world from the stories that we remember as young people.
No, it's no longer James Harriet.
Right,
creatures
exactly.
Great and small. And yes. Also, post-COVID, a lot of veterinary technicians who really run the show, mm-hmm. Behind the scenes, a lot of them didn't come back to work. So most veterinary hospitals are short-staffed.
Right.
And that puts a lot more pressure on the veterinarians.
Yes, it definitely does. It definitely does. So,
and I just want to say, in spite of all of that, I think it's the best profession in the world.
Ah, that's great. That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful. So I know you started an organization, Kids United for Animal Welfare. Tell me what inspired you to do it and what that organization is.
Well, it's in its very beginning stages. Okay. And I just released the website a very short time ago. So I wanted to teach kids about animal welfare for dogs and puppy mills. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, why not expand that to other mm-hmm. animals? So in addition to dogs, I expanded the animal welfare information for kids about all of our food animals. I present the five freedoms of animal mm-hmm. welfare, things such as the ability to engage in behaviors the species would normally behave in. Mm-hmm. For example, chickens like to forage and scratch and take dust baths. Adequate shelter, all of that. And then I present what all those normal behaviors and situations would be for each species.
Mm.
And then I present the reality of factory farms. We've all seen photos
of
pigs confined in crates where they can't turn around,
mm-hmm.
Of chickens crowded into living quarters. They never see the light of day.
Yeah.
So I want to, because I think the younger generation will listen. You know, kids in middle grade, they're just developing this burgeoning awareness of mm-hmm. the world around them and all of the social issues. Yes. And most children intrinsically like animals.
Yes.
So I'm not trying to convince them on this website to go vegan. What I state very clearly is, I will provide factual information and then you can decide what to do with it.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. It was one of the things that's so important for animals. And of course, they don't get this in shelters, but it's freedom of choice. And that's the one thing that's missing in a shelter. I mean, thank God for shelters because they do protect animals and they do give them shelter, food and water and hopefully medical treatment and all, you know, but they do not get to choose because they're experiencing just overwhelmed sensations of hearing, sight, sound, smells, all the different things. And they can't choose what to do, whether to get away from it or whatever. And so whenever we can give any being choice, I think we're contributing to their well-being. And whenever we take away choice, as in factory farming, we do a tremendous disservice. So
absolutely.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short little break. When we come back, I want to hear some of the fun stories from your work with animals as a veterinarian. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps for more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network. Visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection. I'm your host, Jeannie Joseph, the Executive Director of the Human Animal Connection. Delighted to speak with veterinarian Nancy Kay, and she is very, very interested in promoting the human animal bond, which is just such a wonderful thing, and also award winning veterinarian for her work with animal welfare. So tell us a little story. I know you had a fun story about a dog who knew more than the parents knew about what was going on with that person's life. So tell us about that story.
Yes. This is a story about Ruby, a four-year-old French bulldog. And Ruby was referred to me with her two 40-ish, age 45-ish maybe, people, husband and wife. And they brought Ruby in because she had been experiencing some seizures. Now, typically, if a dog is having epileptic seizures, one seizure looks pretty much just like the other seizure. And in this case, they described two very different episodes that suggested to me that maybe this was created by a toxin. And so I asked a very specific question based on my knowledge. I said, during these episodes, did Ruby leak urine? And they said, yes, she did. And I know that dogs with marijuana toxicity classically leak urine.
Wow.
And so I said, I wonder if this could be marijuana toxicity. And they immediately said, no way. We don't have any marijuana in the house. And I said, does anyone else live with you? And they said, well, our 15-year-old son, but he would never. And they had been referred for an MRI scan of the brain.
Wow.
Which is an expensive test that involves general anesthesia.
Yeah.
And so I tried to make it okay for them. I was older than them. And I said, you know, I remember discovering in my basement that my high schooler was brewing beer. And, you know, tried to disclose that it can happen to all of us.
Right, right.
And I said, okay, I can do the MRI. It will cost $3,000 and Ruby will be under anesthesia. Or you could go home and have a conversation with your kiddo. And they opted for the latter.
Yes.
And I talked to them a few days later. And they said, yeah, we don't need that MRI scan. Apparently, the kid would had left some, you know, marijuana joints or something, and the dog got into them. And that explained the episodes. So this poor kid got busted because of his dog and a veterinarian who knew how to ask the right question.
Well, you thank God you asked the right question. And it's very interesting that you thought to ask about leaking urine. Now, is the leaking urine immediately after exposure or any time after? Or how did you make the correlation between the two?
Well, what happens if a dog ingests a toxic amount of marijuana is they go into this sort of stupor, like they're totally stoned. And that usually happens. They ingest it, right?
Yeah.
Not from the smoke. They've ingested a food that contains marijuana or a joint. And during that stuporous phase, they just drip, drip, drip urine.
Interesting.
And we don't know why. But it's pretty characteristic.
Wow. Well, good thing you knew that. I bet you they didn't teach you that in medical school.
Oh, we didn't even have that. You know, that was back way back when. And marijuana wasn't around really to any significant degree.
Right. Fascinating. Okay. And then tell us a story about there was a stray dog that was nursing. Tell us that story.
a good Samaritan who was very concerned about this dog that she found because the dog was out roaming mm-hmm. in a neighborhood that wasn't so great. Mm-hmm. She picked the stray up and brought it in for evaluation to make sure the dog was okay. Mm-hmm. So her first stop was with me rather than a shelter.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And I examined the dog and she was skinny, mm-hmm. but she looked overall healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the woman who brought her in, you need to take her back to where you found her.
Mm.
And she was kind of concerned because this was a stray who wasn't in overtly good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, she's nursing puppies. And,
wow. Yeah.
You know, I showed her that I could squeeze some milk out of her mm-hmm. mammary glands.
Mm-hmm.
So she took the dog back to the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And the dog led her straight to the puppies.
Aw.
In a bad situation. It was a horrible backyard. And, uh-huh. you know, she talked to the people. And what nursing dogs do, or nursing animals, period, including us, is they give up all of their nutrition to the puppies. So
yes.
the puppies can look plump and sassy, but the, uh-huh. the mama is skinny.
Yeah.
So this Good Samaritan talked the owner of the litter and the dog into relinquishing them to her.
Oh.
So she brought them all home with her and found homes for all of them, including the mother. And she kept
wow.
one of the puppies herself.
Isn't
so
that
it's
wonderful?
Just a fun, sweet story.
Yeah. It's so
outcome.
Wonderful. It's yeah. so wonderful. You know, the contrast of humans who would put a dog in that situation, not take care of her, and another human being that would rescue, save, take care of. I mean, it's such a range of humanity, you know, when we
yeah.
see how they are treating animals. It's, oh, my goodness. Okay.
And I got to know the Good Samaritan very mm-hmm. well.
Uh-huh.
And she became a client of mine, and I love her and the way she takes care of her animals. And I always joke that if ever I come back reincarnated as a dog, I want to be in her house.
Yes. Wonderful. Well, good for her. We thank her for her
yes.
good work, her good work. Okay. And now there was another story you had about some Rottweilers that got left behind in your office.
Oh,
tell us that
yeah.
story.
So two people, and I kind of vaguely remember what they looked like, brought two Rottweilers in for some procedures of some sort. I don't even remember the details, but we ended up bringing the dogs into the hospital. These were adult female Rottweilers who were pregnant, and I knew they were pregnant. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, the people skedaddled,
mm.
and they had left false information in terms of phone number, address, mm-hmm. all mm-hmm. of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up with these two abandoned Rottweilers.
Mm.
And within the next 24 hours, both of them delivered a total of 18 Rottweiler puppies.
Oh, wow. 18.
And the mothers were divine because we uh-huh. were strangers,
yeah.
but they let us interact with the puppies, and
uh-huh.
they were marvelous dogs.
Yeah.
And so we took it upon ourselves, everyone on staff, to help raise the puppies and find homes for them and uh-huh. the mama dogs.
Aww.
And a year later, we hosted a Rottweiler reunion.
Oh.
So we got to see a lot of the puppies come back, including the mama dogs.
Uh-huh.
And it was pretty clear that the father of the litter, or fathers of the litter, at least a couple of them, one or two of them, had German Shepherd breeding.
Ah, okay.
Because
okay.
a lot of the puppies looked like German Shepherds.
Wow. That's wild. Now, how did you deal with 18 puppies in an office? I mean, how did that?
We set up a whole room. Each of them got the whole room with all the bedding that they needed.
Okay.
Just to make the dogs completely comfortable.
Yes.
And we let them do that for approximately 2 weeks.
Yes.
And then one of the staff members fostered the rest of the time periods for the dogs.
Wow.
Until they were 8 to 10 weeks old and could be adopted.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, there are these beautiful miracle stories that happen every day. So
yes.
I know we hear so many other stories that aren't happy and aren't good, but it's that's why it's so important to remember there are good stories.
There are happy endings.
There are happy endings, good people just you know, taking a little extra step to help a being in need. And you know, can you feel the gratitude from the dogs, like those two Rottweilers that didn't even know you?
100%. Yeah. I like to say dogs know how to talk to us. We need to learn how to listen.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, of course, in the human-animal connection, we believe that we can talk to animals. We believe mm-hmm. that it is possible to cross the species barriers or so-called barriers and you know, at the very least, to pay attention to overt body language and what the dog is communicating in physical terms or vocal terms. But beyond that, we think it's possible because we have the belief that animals have emotions, thoughts, and opinions. What do you think about that? You've been a veterinarian for a long time. I won't ask you how many years, but
Yeah. 42.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In your experience, because now let's say when you first started veterinary school, if you raised your hand and said, excuse me, teacher, do dogs have emotions? You probably would have gotten laughed out of class.
Absolutely.
But
now we know that they do based mm-hmm. on science.
Right.
We know that they do.
Tell me about dogs that
were trained, which is magical to me. They trained a group of dogs to lay perfectly still in an MRI machine. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever had an MRI, those are super noisy, banging yes. kinds of machines.
Yes.
But they train these dogs to put their head on a stand uh-huh. and lay perfectly still in the MRI machine. Mm-hmm. And then they would interact with the dogs on the end of the tube and watch what areas of their brain would light up. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if a stranger came, mm-hmm. something might happen. But if the owner came and the dog mm-hmm. had sensed the owner was there, an area of the brain completely lit up.
Right.
So there's lots of studies and there's yes. wonderful books. Dr. Lynn Horwitz, she has mm-hmm. a great book on mm-hmm. studying dogs' emotions. And I really believe that animals do talk with us, but
yes.
we just have to understand how to access that. When I'm talking with people when they're debating, is it time to let my pet go? It's an older pet or a pet with a disease. And mm-hmm. they're debating, is it time? You know, they don't want to wait too long, but they don't want to act too early.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, go eyeball to eyeball with that yes. animal.
Yes.
And really feel what they're telling you about
yes.
that.
Yeah.
So I believe that 100%.
Absolutely.
100%.
And
we can't even imagine the sensors that dogs have.
Mm-hmm.
It's so magical. You know, they can push someone out of the way of a falling structure or a falling mm-hmm. tree. They know mm-hmm. it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
How animals tolerate us, clunky, insensitive mm-hmm. humans.
It's right.
Amazing.
They're very tolerant of us idiot
They're
humans.
So tolerant.
Yeah.
So, but no, I really believe we can understand animals. And my middle child, he's now 39, and uh-huh. he was the sensitive one. And he uh-huh. truly believed when he was a kid that uh-huh. the animals talked to him.
Yes.
And I have no doubt he was perceiving that.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah. we definitely want to help children who are having that experience to know that it is true. And
yeah.
there was a time when it was totally believed, and then there was a time it was not believed at all. And now there's a time that it's coming to be believed again. So that's
yes.
really, really, really important. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I know you, as a veterinarian, you've had to do a lot of euthanasias. In your experience, do you feel like the animals understand or accept? Have you seen fear or not seen fear? Are they peaceful? What would you say you've noticed in those situations, let's say with the deeper bonds, the people who love them so much and
yeah.
dealing with maybe the hardest moment of their lives? But with the animals, what do you sense that the animals know or understand about that time?
I sense that a lot of animals look to it to provide them with relief
mm-hmm.
from pain and distress.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that when the loving human being is with that animal,
mm-hmm.
I feel that there's a lot more peace for the
yes.
animal
yes.
in the process.
Yes.
When the person isn't there, that's... And I would always try to find a loving technician
mm-hmm.
who would cradle that mm-hmm. animal in their
mm-hmm.
arms.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't get rid of all the fear and anxiety.
Right.
So I encourage so strongly
yes.
for people to be with their animals at the time of euthanasia.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And some just won't or can't.
Some won't, some can't, you know, some can't face it. But when they understand what the difference that it makes for the animal,
yes.
You know, it's so important. I've heard many veterinarians say this, that there's a real difference when the animal has their loving person with them.
Yeah.
And, we just want to encourage people, be brave. You won't regret it that you went that
exactly.
extra mile. Yeah,
exactly.
And you may regret it if you don't.
That's exactly what I say.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you for the beautiful work that you've done with animals across your whole career and that you're continuing to do with your educational efforts through your book and your mission. How can people find out about your books or your website? How can people contact you?
Sure. So the book, A Dog Named 647, you can purchase from any book retailer, mm-hmm. online or in person. I encourage people to go to indie bookstores, mm-hmm. and they may not have the book, but I just ask them to order it and they'll, mm-hmm. they'll get it for you. Mm-hmm. My author website is drnancykay.com. And there's no period after the DR.
Okay. And drnancykay.com.
Yeah. And you'll find everything about, well, not everything about me, but a lot of information and as well as my books.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the Human Animal Connection.
Thank you, Jeannie. And thanks for all the work you do as well.
Thank you. Bye for now. We'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you for tuning into the Human Animal Connection show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.